Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Story 1. I'm Jake, a trucker based out of Denver, Colorado. I've been driving rigs for over 15 years, and I've seen just about everything you can imagine out on the road. Blizzards, tornadoes, animals darting across the highway. Name it, I've dealt with it. But what happened to me that day on I-76 still gives me chills every time I think about it. It was late afternoon, maybe around 4:30 p.m. The sun was beginning its slow descent, casting long shadows across the highway. I was hauling a load westbound, just cruising along at 70 miles an hour. Traffic was light. Most folks had already cleared out of the area ahead of rush hour. Just me, the hum of my engine, and the open road. I remember noticing how calm everything felt. The kind of calm that makes you uneasy, you know. The air was still, the horizon shimmered with heat, and even the radio had gone static in the middle of a song. I should have trusted my gut when it told me something was off, but I was tired and more focused on making my delivery on time. That's when I saw it. At first, it was just a smudge on the horizon, a dark mass moving fast and low, like a shadow that didn't belong to anything. I squinted, trying to make sense of it. Maybe it was dirt kicked up by a truck ahead, but there weren't any taillights in sight. I scanned the sky, thinking maybe it was a dust devil, but the air was too still for that. Whatever it was coming straight at me. I gripped the wheel tighter, my pulse quickening. The closer it got, the more it grew. This swirling, writhing wall of something. It had to be at least 20 feet wide and 10 feet tall, and it was moving fast, like it had a purpose. My mind raced. Was it a flock of birds? No, too dense. A tornado? No, it wasn't spinning. Then what the hell was it? Before I could process it, the mass was on me. I slammed on the brakes, but I couldn't stop in time. The thing engulfed my truck with a deafening thud that rattled my bones. It wasn't dirt. It was alive. The windshield went completely black, and a sickening splatter of yellowish goo and dark, stringy chunks streaked across the glass. I couldn't see a damn thing. "What the hell?" I yelled, fumbling for the wipers. I hit the washers, but the fluid barely made a dent in the mess. The smell hit me next, sharp, sour, and sickly sweet, like rotting fruit mixed with death. My stomach churned, but I kept my focus on keeping the truck steady. I slowed to a crawl, heart pounding, praying there wasn't something big enough in that mess to shatter the windshield or send me careening off the road. The sound was the worst part, like rocks pelting the cab, each impact echoing through the metal. Whatever these things were, they were huge. Finally, the swarm thinned out, and I could see again, sort of. The windshield was a smeared canvas of guts and wings, and my mirrors weren't much better. I pulled onto the shoulder, hands trembling as I threw the truck into park. For a second, I just sat there, trying to catch my breath. My chest felt tight, my skin clammy. I hadn't been that scared since my first year on the job, when a deer had jumped out in front of me on a mountain road. I climbed out of the cab, legs shaky, and walked around to inspect the damage. The front of my truck was unrecognizable. The grill was clogged with what looked like giant insects. Bees, maybe, but these were no ordinary bees. They were massive, easily the size of golf balls, with thick, hairy bodies and jagged wings that shimmered in the fading sunlight. Some were still twitching, their legs clawing weakly at the air. I kicked one off the step, and it made a dull thud against the pavement. My boot left a sticky residue where it had crushed the thing. I bent down to get a closer look, against my better judgment. Its eyes were glossy black, and its mandibles looked like they could snap a finger clean off. I shuddered and backed away. That's when I heard it, a low buzzing hum, faint at first but growing louder. I turned toward the sound and my blood ran cold. On the horizon, another dark cloud was forming. This one was even bigger than the first and it was headed straight for me. Shit, I muttered, scrambling back into the cab. I slammed the door and locked it, like that would do any good. The truck roared to life as I floored the accelerator, merging back onto the highway. My heart was hammering in my chest, the hum growing louder behind me. I glanced in the rearview mirror, and there they were, a solid wall of black, their wings catching the light like shards of glass. They were gaining on me, and fast. I pushed the truck as hard as it would go, the engine screaming in protest. The speedometer climbed past 80, 85, 90. The swarm closed the gap. They hit the truck like a freight train, the impact nearly knocking me off the road. The windshield cracked under the pressure, tiny fissures spiderwebbing outward. The cab filled with the sound of their bodies slamming against the metal, a cacophony of buzzing, clicking, and pounding. My ears rang, my head throbbed, and the smell, the goddamn smell, was everywhere. And then, just as suddenly as it had started, it was over. The swarm broke apart, dispersing into the fields on either side of the highway. The buzzing faded, replaced by the low rumble of my engine and my own ragged breathing. I didn't stop. I couldn't. I just kept driving, my hands gripping the wheel so tightly they ached. It wasn't until I reached a truck stop an hour later that I finally pulled over. I stumbled out of the cab, my legs weak, and collapsed onto the pavement. A couple of other drivers came over, asking if I was okay. I couldn't even answer them. I just pointed to the truck. The front was covered in a thick, sticky layer of guts and wings. The windshield was cracked in a dozen places, and the grill looked like it had been through a war. One of the drivers let out a low whistle. "Jesus Christ," he said. "What the hell happened to you?" I didn't know how to explain it. Hell, I still don't. All I know is that I've been on high alert every time I've driven that stretch of Interstate 76 since, and I pray to God I never see anything like that again. Story 2. I had been on the road for hours that night, chasing the endless stretch of asphalt outside of Las Vegas. The desert has a way of swallowing you whole. Just you, the hum of your car, and the occasional pair of headlights in the distance. It was 3 a.m., and I was halfway between tired and wired, running on caffeine and adrenaline. The isolation of the highway felt suffocating, like I was the only person left in the world. Then I saw them. Three black SUVs, each identical, their glossy paint catching the faint moonlight. They were in front of me, moving fast but not recklessly, their engines humming in unison. I wouldn't have thought twice about it. This was Nevada, after all, home to high rollers and secretive government experiments. But their license plates caught my eye. Single digits. First, second, third. It struck me as strange, almost deliberate. I wondered if it was some rich person's eccentricity, maybe casino owners on a joyride. But the way they moved, sticking together like a convoy, made my skin prickle. For reasons I couldn't explain, I kept pace with them. I wasn't tailgating or anything, just staying far enough back to avoid suspicion. The monotony of the drive had been getting to me, and I figured I'd let these strange vehicles be my company. I told myself it was nothing, but deep down, something didn't feel right. The air in the car felt heavier, as if the desert itself was warning me to turn back. About an hour later, I noticed something else. The SUVs weren't passing any exits. In fact, they hadn't slowed down, not even once, despite the long stretches of open road and the occasional desolate gas station. It was as though they had a destination that didn't exist on any map. Then it happened. Without warning, they veered to the right. At first, I thought they were taking an unmarked exit, but there was no sign, no mile marker, no landmark, just a patch of dirt where the desert blurred into shadow. One by one, they left the highway, their movements precise, synchronized, like they were following an invisible path. I slowed down as I passed the spot, craning my neck to get a better look. I shouldn't have. The SUVs were parked in a perfect line about 50 feet off the highway, their lights off. Everything about it was unnerving. The night was pitch black, yet I could make out their dark shapes against the sand. No one got out of the vehicles, but I could feel their presence, heavy and palpable, like a pressure in my chest. It was as though they were watching me, even though I couldn't see them. A thought flickered in my mind. Keep driving. But my hands were frozen on the wheel. I coasted to a stop a few yards past their turnoff, the silence inside my car deafening. My heartbeat was a drumbeat in my ears, and I stared into my rearview mirror, half expecting to see figures emerging from the SUVs. The desert was silent. Too silent. I don't know what compelled me, but I rolled my window down just an inch, enough to let the cold night air seep in. That's when I heard it. Something faint, like a low hum. At first I thought it was the sound of the wind, but it wasn't.
Craftsman days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V26 Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Visit Lowe's and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 7-9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
It was rhythmic, almost mechanical, and it seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere at once. It didn't sound like engines. It sounded like something alive. I couldn't explain the fear that gripped me then. It wasn't the kind of fear you get when you're startled or in immediate danger. This was primal, like every instinct in my body was screaming to get away. I didn't even bother turning off my blinker. I slammed on the gas and sped down the highway, leaving the SUVs in their eerie formation behind me. For the next 20 minutes, I kept glancing in my mirrors, half expecting those black vehicles to reappear, their headlights blazing as they chased me down the endless road. But the highway remained empty. Still, the feeling of being watched didn't leave me. It clung to me like a second skin, and no matter how loud I turned up the radio, I couldn't drown out the unease. Eventually, I reached a small rest stop, one of those middle-of-nowhere places with flickering fluorescent lights and a vending machine that probably hadn't been restocked in years. I pulled into the parking lot, my hands trembling on the steering wheel. For a moment, I just sat there, trying to convince myself that what I'd seen was nothing. But then I noticed something, the hum. It was faint but unmistakable, vibrating through the air like a warning. My eyes darted to the horizon, and that's when I saw it. A faint, pulsating glow in the distance, back toward the direction I'd come from. It wasn't headlights, and it wasn't the soft glow of a town or city. It was something else, something that didn't belong. I didn't stay to find out what it was. I peeled out of the rest stop, my tires kicking up gravel as I sped back onto the highway. I drove until the first signs of daylight broke over the desert, until the world felt normal again. Story 3. I live in a small, quiet town in the north of Switzerland, surrounded by forests that stretch on for miles. It's the kind of place where the silence can be deafening, and the darkness feels like it has weight. I didn't mind it, though. My little 50cc dirt bike had been my companion for years, carrying me through the winding roads, whether it was a quick ride to the village or a late-night journey home. But there was one night, one ride that I'll never forget. It still gives me chills when I think about it. It was a few years ago. I had been at my girlfriend's house, losing track of time as we talked and laughed, and before I knew it, it was 3 a.m. I wasn't too worried. The ride home was only about 20 minutes, cutting straight through the forest. I'd done it dozens of times before. Sure, it was pitch black out there with no streetlights, but the hum of my engine and the narrow beam of my headlight always felt like enough to push back the darkness. That night felt different from the start. The air was colder than usual, sharp against my face, and there wasn't a sound except for the growl of my bike. Normally, you'd hear the rustle of leaves, the distant cry of an owl, or even the occasional rustling of wildlife. But that night, it was as if the forest itself was holding its breath. I shook off the unease and focused on the road ahead. The trees on either side were dense, their branches intertwining to form a canopy that blocked out even the faint light of the stars. My headlight barely seemed to penetrate the darkness, but I pushed forward, the tires humming against the asphalt. Halfway through the forest, I noticed something up ahead, just at the edge of my headlight's reach, a shape, pale and human-like, standing motionless on the shoulder of the road. My heart skipped. At first, I thought it was a person, maybe a jogger or a lost hiker. But as I got closer, I realized something was off. It wasn't moving. I slowed down instinctively, my pulse pounding in my ears. The beam of my headlights swept over it, and that's when I saw it, a naked mannequin. It was standing upright, its blank, featureless face turned toward the road, its arms hanging lifelessly at its sides. I felt a jolt of confusion and fear. What the hell was it doing there? Who would leave something like that in the middle of nowhere? My brain scrambled for an explanation, but nothing made sense. The sheer absurdity of it made my stomach churn. I didn't stop. My instinct screamed at me to keep going, so I tightened my grip on the handlebars and twisted the throttle. The engine roared as I sped past, but in that fleeting moment, as I passed it, I swear I saw its head tilt slightly. Just enough to notice. My breath hitched, and I nearly lost control of the bike. "No, no, no," I muttered under my breath, trying to convince myself I'd imagined it. My mind raced. Was someone playing a prank? Was it just the shadows playing tricks on me? But deep down, I knew what I saw. I didn't dare look back. The thought of turning around and seeing it standing in the middle of the road, or worse, closer than before, made my skin crawl. I just focused on the road, forcing myself to stay steady as I sped through the forest. The ride felt like an eternity. Every shadow seemed to stretch toward me. Every rustle of leaves sounded like footsteps. I could feel the sweat trickling down my back despite the cold. My bike felt slower than it ever had, as if something unseen was holding me back, trying to pull me into the darkness. When I finally saw the edge of the forest, the relief was almost overwhelming. The open fields beyond felt like a lifeline. I didn't stop until I reached my driveway, skidding to a halt and killing the engine in one motion. I was shaking so badly I could barely get off the bike. Once inside, I locked every door and window, something I'd never done before. My heart was still racing as I sat in the living room, the faint hum of the fridge the only sound breaking the silence. I tried to convince myself it was just some stupid prank, a mannequin left there by kids messing around. But then I remembered the way its head had tilted. Sleep didn't come easily that night. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw that pale figure standing on the roadside, its featureless face staring at me. The next day, I told a friend about what had happened. He laughed, saying someone must have been pulling a joke. But when I asked him to ride back with me to check, he hesitated. We went anyway, retracing my route through the forest in broad daylight. The mannequin was gone. There was no sign it had ever been there. No footprints, no scuff marks, nothing. It was as if it had vanished into thin air. My friend shrugged it off, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something wasn't right. Story 4. A few years ago, I found myself in the Virginia, Maryland area for work. It was one of those hectic weeks where I had to hop from downtown Baltimore to Virginia Beach and everywhere in between. By Friday evening, I'd wrapped up all the tasks and headed out for a weekend with friends scattered across Virginia. We had a blast. Good food, plenty of laughs, and some impromptu road trips to places I hadn't even planned to visit. By Sunday night, I was exhausted, but not the kind of exhaustion that leaves you foggy or drained. I was clear-headed and ready for the late-night drive back. I'd even managed to avoid drinking or indulging in anything that would slow me down. I had a late afternoon start the next day, but I knew I couldn't push it much further. Around 3 a.m., I was cruising on the highway between Roanoke and D.C. If you've ever been out there, you know it's the kind of place where middle of nowhere isn't just a phrase, it's a fact. There were no headlights ahead, no taillights behind, and no street lamps lining the road. Just me, my off-road SUV, and an endless stretch of damp asphalt cutting through the fog. The fog wasn't heavy enough to be dangerous, but it clung low, licking at the edges of the highway. I had the music up, something upbeat to keep me alert. I remember thinking how peaceful it was. Then I saw it. I don't know what made me glance to my left. There was no reason to. It was the kind of night where you drive half on autopilot, barely paying attention to the empty expanse around you. But something pulled my eyes there. And what I saw still makes my skin crawl. There was a dog staring at me, a German Shepherd. Its face was pressed against the passenger window of a white Crown Vic that was somehow right next to me, matching my speed. It wasn't just staring, it was barking. I couldn't hear it over my music, but its teeth flashed as it snarled, its breath fogging up the glass. For a split second, my brain froze. It didn't make sense. Then, as if my thoughts clicked into place like a puzzle, I noticed the light bar on the roof, the faint blue glow of instruments inside the car, and realized, cop car, and I was doing well over 90 in a 75. Oh shit, I muttered, my stomach plummeting. My foot moved to the brake, easing down hard but not slamming it. I hit my blinker to start shifting to the right lane, intending to pull over. I glanced left again, preparing for the inevitable shame of a speeding ticket. But then my heart stopped. There was no shoulder on the left side of the highway. None. Not even a sliver of space for a car to ride alongside me. Just a steep, rocky embankment and some scattered trees. My eyes shot back to the left, expecting... I don't even know what I expected. But the Crown Vic? The dog? Gone. Gone. I slammed my brakes hard, slowing to a full stop in the middle of the empty highway. My SUV's light bars lit up the road like daylight as I sat there, heart hammering, scanning the stretch of asphalt for any sign of that car. There was nothing. No taillights fading into the distance, no headlights ahead, no sound of an engine. The only sound was my own breathing, ragged and sharp, as I flipped on my handheld spotlight and swept it over the area. I pointed it at the left side of the road, the slope of wet grass and jagged rocks leading into the woods. There was no way anyone could have driven off that edge without crashing. I got out of my SUV, my boots crunching on the damp pavement as I paced around, shining the light into the fog. The road was empty in both directions. The dampness on the asphalt revealed only my own tire marks. I walked over to the edge of the road and pointed the beam of my light down the slope. No broken branches, no churned up grass, no signs that any vehicle had gone through. My pulse was pounding in my ears as I stood there, scanning the darkness, my breath clouding in the chilly air. What the hell? I whispered to no one. I stayed there for a good 10 minutes trying to make sense of it, but there was nothing to find. No explanation, no evidence. It was as if the car and the dog had never existed. Finally, I climbed back into my SUV, locked the doors, and sat there for a moment, gripping the wheel tightly. The night was silent again, but it no longer felt peaceful. The fog seemed thicker, pressing in on me like it knew something I didn't. I drove the rest of the way home at the speed limit, eyes flicking to my mirrors and over my shoulder more times than I'd like to admit. Every shadow in the fog felt alive. Every glint of light, a pair of headlights that never materialized. When I finally pulled into my driveway hours later, I sat in the car for a long time, staring at my empty street, replaying the moment over and over in my head. It didn't make sense. It couldn't have happened. And yet, it did. Story 5. I'll never forget that night. It was the winter of 94, and I was hauling a load of logs out of the Coeur d'Alene area in northern Idaho. I'd been driving these roads for years, but nothing prepared me for what happened on that mountain. The snow was coming down hard, heavier than they'd forecasted, and the wind howled like a freight train. It was the kind of night you pray your chains hold, because sliding off the road here meant plunging into a ravine with no chance of rescue until spring. I was alone, my rig the only set of lights cutting through the blizzard, and the forest on either side loomed like an impenetrable wall. As I approached the grade, one of those long, winding descents with tight switchbacks, I knew I had to stop and put on chains. No question about it. I pulled over at a small turnout just before the drop, stepped out into the biting cold, and grabbed my gear from the side box. The air felt wrong. I can't explain it. I've spent my life in the woods, hunting, hauling, camping. I know the sounds and smells of the forest, but that night, it was like everything was holding its breath. No wind through the trees, no creaking branches under the weight of snow, just silence. So thick it pressed against your ears. As I knelt to secure the first chain, I felt it. A sudden wave of dread washed over me, so intense it stopped me mid-movement. Every hair on my body stood on end, and my breath came out in shallow, frosty puffs. It wasn't just fear. It was primal, the kind of terror you don't question. I stood up, my head snapping toward the tree line. Nothing. Just darkness and falling snow. My heart pounded so hard I could feel it in my throat. Get it together, I muttered, trying to steady my hands as I bent back down. But the feeling didn't go away. It only got worse. I swear I could feel eyes on me. I finished with the chains in record time, not even checking them properly. I just wanted to get back in the cab. As I climbed in and slammed the door, I locked it out of instinct, a habit I never had on the mountain. The engine's rumble was a comfort, but the unease didn't leave. I started down the grade, gripping the wheel so tight my knuckles ached. The road was slick, and the switchbacks required precision. Every time I rounded a corner, my headlights swept over the embankments and the sheer drops beyond. And then I saw it. At first, it was just a shadow, something that didn't belong. On the next curve, my lights caught it fully. It was standing on the edge of the embankment, maybe 20 feet above the road, a figure tall and broad, with shoulders wider than any man's. Its outline was blurred by the snow, but it was dark, solid, massive. I hit the brakes instinctively, the rig shuddering under the strain. My headlights locked on it for just a second before it moved. It jumped, straight down, landing on the road with a force I could feel even inside the cab. The thing was enormous. Its shoulders were level with my cab window, at least 8 feet tall, if not more. I barely had time to process it before it moved again, this time leaping across the road and up the opposite embankment in a single bound. Gone. I sat there, frozen, my foot still on the brake. The whole thing couldn't have lasted more than 5 seconds, but it felt like an eternity. I didn't want to believe what I'd just seen. My mind scrambled for explanations. A bear, a moose, a trick of the light. But nothing fit. Bears don't move like that, and moose sure as hell don't stand on two legs. I floored it. The rest of the descent was a blur. I kept expecting to see it again, waiting for it to come barreling out of the trees or drop onto the cab from above. My eyes flicked constantly between the road and the mirrors, but there was nothing, just the snow and the winding road. By the time I reached the base of the mountain, I was shaking. I didn't stop to take off the chains until I was miles away, on a straight stretch of highway with no forest in sight. Even then, I left the engine running and kept one hand on the door handle, ready to jump back in at the first sign of movement. I've thought about that night more times than I can count. At first, I told myself it was a Sasquatch. It made sense, at least as much sense as anything could. But the more I replayed it in my mind, the less I believed that. There was something wrong about it. It wasn't just big. It felt evil. Now, I'm not a superstitious man. I've never been one to believe in ghosts or demons or any of that. But that night made me question everything. Whatever I saw, it wasn't natural. It wasn't supposed to be there. And it wanted me to know it. I don't take that route in the winter anymore. Hell, I avoid it whenever I can. Story 6. It was late, maybe just past midnight, when I left my aunt's place near Coeur d'Alene. The drive back to Spokane was one I'd done dozens of times before, but something about that night felt different. The air seemed heavy, almost oppressive, as I wound my way through the dark back roads. The radio was off, my phone was nearly dead, and it was just me, the low hum of the engine, and the occasional rustle of trees in the cold night air. Somewhere along the way, the fog rolled in, sudden and thick, swallowing the headlights and reducing the world around me to a blur. I slowed to a crawl, leaning forward instinctively, as if that would help me see farther ahead. The road twisted sharply, and as I rounded the bend, my heart nearly stopped. A herd of deer, at least a dozen, came charging down the road directly toward me. I slammed on the brakes, skidding slightly on the damp asphalt, and gripped the wheel so hard my knuckles turned white. The deer scattered at the last second, leaping into the foggy woods on either side. My pulse thundered in my ears, but I forced myself to exhale and ease off the brake. "Just a herd of deer," I muttered, trying to shake the unease that was coiling in my gut. But the moment I pressed the gas, I saw her. She was standing in the middle of the road, facing away from me, her silhouette blurred by the fog and my headlights. She wasn't moving, just standing there, head slightly tilted, her arms limp at her sides. Her clothes were dirty, baggy sweatpants and a tattered hoodie, as far as I could tell. At first, I thought she might have been one of the addicts who sometimes wandered out of the nearby towns. That area wasn't exactly known for its safety, especially at night. I rolled down my window, just a crack, enough to speak, but not enough for anyone to reach inside. "Hey," I called out, my voice shaking more than I liked. Are you okay? Do you need me to call someone? The sound of my voice broke the eerie stillness, and the woman's head snapped around like a marionette's. Too fast, too unnatural. The breath hitched in my throat as the headlights illuminated her face. Her skin was shiny, almost waxy, like it had been melted and reformed in a rush. Her eyes were huge, bulging and lidless, staring straight into me with an intensity that made my stomach churn. She had no eyebrows, no discernible nose, just two slits where one should have been. And her mouth was wrong. The corners stretched downward, as if someone had taken a thread and crudely sewn it shut, leaving jagged scars behind. I froze, unable to move, unable to think, as she stared at me for what felt like an eternity. Then, without warning, she bolted into the woods, her movements jerky and inhuman. She didn't stumble or hesitate, just disappeared into the darkness as if she belonged to it. I don't remember much after that. My hands were trembling so badly I could barely grip the steering wheel, but I slammed my foot on the gas and didn't let up until I reached the city limits. My mind raced the entire drive home, replaying the image of her face over and over again. It didn't make sense. None of it made sense. By the time I pulled into my driveway, I was drenched in sweat, my heart still hammering in my chest. I sat there for a long time, staring at my hands on the wheel, trying to convince myself that it was just some messed up junkie, that my imagination had exaggerated the details, but that wasn't true. Story 7. It was a night I'll never forget. My name is James, and at the time I lived in San Antonio, Texas. I had two friends with me, Mike and Carl, and we were heading to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, for what was supposed to be a quick weekend trip. We'd borrowed my old Ford Econoline van for the journey, a reliable beast that had seen its fair share of long hauls and late-night adventures. But nothing could have prepared us for what happened that night. It was about 2 a.m., and we were well past Laredo, driving down one of those long, desolate stretches of Texas highway. If you've ever been out there, you know the kind of darkness I'm talking about, the kind where your headlights barely make a dent, and the stars above seem closer than the ground below. No towns, no gas stations, no lights, nothing but the endless black void pressing in on all sides. It's the sort of place that makes you feel small, insignificant, and utterly alone. Mike was in the passenger seat, half asleep, and Carl was stretched out in the back, snoring softly. The road was empty except for the occasional 18-wheeler rumbling by. I had the radio turned low, just enough to keep me company, though the static was starting to bleed through the station. My eyes were fixed on the highway ahead, a thin ribbon of asphalt that seemed to stretch into infinity. Then I saw it. A truck ahead of us, its taillights glowing faintly in the distance. I was in the right lane, cruising steadily, and as I got closer, I decided to pass. I signaled, checked my mirrors, and eased into the left lane. The truck was one of those long ones, probably hauling freight, and I started to overtake it slowly. The van wasn't exactly a speed demon, but it got the job done. That's when it happened. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed the truck ahead veer sharply to the right, its wheels skidding slightly on the shoulder. My stomach dropped as I saw the reason why, a figure, a person, walking across the highway, right in front of us. "What the hell?" I muttered, gripping the wheel tighter. "What's going on?" Mike jolted awake, his voice thick with sleep. "Someone's on the road," I shouted, my heart hammering in my chest. The figure was dressed in white from head to toe, stark against the darkness. White pants, a white shirt, even their face was pale, almost glowing in the dim light of my high beams. Their arms were crossed over their chest and they moved slowly, deliberately, as if they were sleepwalking. Or worse, as if they didn't care what happened to them. The most chilling detail, their eyes were closed. "James, watch out!" Mike screamed, his voice cutting through the rising panic in my head. I yanked the wheel hard to the left, swerving as far as I dared without losing control. The van's tires screamed against the pavement, and for a split second, time seemed to freeze. The figure's face loomed in the passenger side mirror, so close I could see the delicate veins beneath their closed eyelids. I swear I could even hear their steady breathing as we missed them by mere inches. The van roared past, and the figure disappeared into the darkness behind us. My hands were shaking, knuckles white as I gripped the wheel. The entire van was silent except for the sound of my own ragged breathing. "What the hell was that?" Mike finally said, his voice barely above a whisper. I didn't answer. I couldn't. My mind was racing, trying to process what I had just seen. Who in their right mind would be walking across a deserted highway in the middle of the night? And why dressed in all white? It didn't make any sense. "Pull over," Carl said from the back, his voice unusually calm. He had woken up at some point during the commotion, though I hadn't noticed. "What?" I snapped, glancing at him in the rearview mirror. "I said pull over, man. We need to stop. That wasn't normal." I wanted to argue, to keep driving and put as much distance as possible between us and whatever, or whoever, we had just encountered. But something in Carl's tone made me listen. I eased the van onto the shoulder and killed the engine. The silence was deafening. For a moment, none of us spoke. We just sat there staring at the empty road ahead. My hands were still trembling, and I had to remind myself to breathe. "You saw them too, right?" Mike finally broke the silence. "I'm not crazy." "You're not crazy," I said, my voice hollow. "I saw them." "What the hell were they doing out there?" Carl asked, his normally steady voice tinged with unease. "In the middle of nowhere, dressed like that. It's not normal, man. It's not right." "I don't know," I admitted, "but we almost hit them. I swear to God, we almost hit them." We sat there for a long time, the three of us trying to make sense of what had just happened. But no matter how we tried to rationalize it, the pieces didn't fit. A hitchhiker? Maybe. But why the closed eyes, the white clothes, the way they moved so calmly across the road, as if they were untouchable? "Do you think..." Mike hesitated, as if afraid to say the words out loud. "Do you think it was... you know, a ghost?" "Don't start with that crap," Carl said sharply, though his tone betrayed his own uncertainty. I didn't say anything. I didn't want to admit it, but the thought had already crossed my mind. There was something otherworldly about the figure, something that didn't belong in the realm of the living. Eventually, I started the van and pulled back onto the road. None of us said a word for the rest of the drive. The radio stayed off, and the darkness outside seemed even heavier, pressing against the windows like a living thing. Every so often, I caught myself glancing in the rearview mirror, half expecting to see the figure standing in the road behind us, watching as we drove away. We made it to Baton Rouge just as the sun was rising, the first rays of light chasing away the shadows that had haunted us through the night. I still wonder who or what that figure was, but deep down, I'm not sure I want to know. Some things are better left unexplained. Story 8. I'm a truck driver, been one for the better part of 15 years, born and bred in Yorkshire, but my work takes me all over the UK. I've driven through every kind of terrain you can imagine, motorways, congested cities, and those desolate country roads where it feels like the world's been abandoned. That's where this happened. A lonely stretch of rural Scotland on a night I'll never forget. I was hauling a load of building materials to Inverness. The sat-nav took me down one of those narrow country lanes you'd expect to see in a horror film. Trees so close they almost formed a tunnel, their twisted branches reaching out like claws. It was late, probably around 2 a.m., and the kind of darkness you only get in the countryside. No streetlights, no houses, just the faint glow of my headlights carving through the pitch black. I'd been driving for hours and everything was silent except for the rumble of the engine. No music, no radio chatter, just me and the road. Then as I rounded a bend, something caught my eye. At first it was faint, a flicker of light through the trees. I thought maybe it was a farmhouse, but as I got closer, the lights grew brighter, more erratic. Reds, blues, greens, flashing, pulsating, almost rhythmic. "What the hell?" I muttered, gripping the wheel tighter. I slowed down instinctively, my eyes darting between the road and the kaleidoscope of lights bleeding through the trees. They weren't stationary. They moved, darting back and forth, casting jagged shadows across the lane. The shadows. They didn't make sense. They shifted and twisted in ways that defied the angles of the light, as if they had a mind of their own. I stopped the truck. Big mistake. Sitting there, engine idling, I stared at the scene in front of me. The lights weren't just reflecting off the trees. They seemed to be coming from them, like the woods themselves were alive. A low hum began to creep into the cab, faint at first, but it grew louder the longer I sat there. It wasn't like any sound I'd heard before, part mechanical, part organic. It made my chest vibrate, like standing too close to a subwoofer. Something wasn't right. Every instinct in me screamed to turn around, to floor it and get the hell out of there. But I couldn't move. It wasn't fear, not entirely. It was like the lights had me in a trance, pulling me in. That's when I saw it. Oh. A figure stepped out from the tree line, bathed in the shifting lights. It wasn't human. At least it didn't look human. It was tall, unnaturally thin, with elongated limbs that seemed to stretch as it moved. Its face, if you could call it that, was featureless. Just a smooth, pale surface that reflected the lights like glass. It didn't walk. It glided, its movements unnervingly fluid, like a puppet with invisible strings. I slammed the truck into reverse, my hands shaking so badly I could barely grip the gear stick. The figure stopped in the middle of the road, its head, or what I assumed was its head, tilting to one side as if it was studying me. Then it raised a hand, impossibly long fingers extending toward the truck. The lights intensified, flashing faster and faster, until they were almost blinding. The hum turned into a deafening roar, drowning out the sound of the engine. My vision blurred, and for a split second, I thought I was going to black out. "Move, damn it!" I yelled at myself, slamming my foot on the accelerator. The truck lurched backward, tires skidding on the gravel. I didn't care if I scraped the sides of the lane or smashed into a ditch. I just needed to get away. The figure didn't move. It stood there, arm outstretched, as if it was daring me to come closer. The lights followed me, pulsating through the trees, casting those impossible shadows that danced and writhed like they were alive. I must have reversed for half a mile before I found enough space to turn the truck around. My heart was pounding so hard I thought it would burst. I didn't even bother checking the mirrors. I just floored it, tearing down the lane like a madman. The lights didn't follow me this time. They stayed behind, flickering through the trees until they were swallowed by the darkness. When I finally hit the main road, I pulled over and sat there trembling. My hands were white-knuckled on the wheel, sweat dripping down my face despite the freezing temperature outside. I tried to rationalize what I'd seen. Maybe it was some kind of light show, a festival in the woods. Maybe the figure was just a trick of the shadows, my mind playing tricks on me after too many hours on the road. But deep down, I knew none of that was true. I never reported it. What would I even say? That I saw lights in the woods and a creature that didn't belong in this world? They'd think I was crazy, or worse, they'd think I was making it up for attention. So I kept it to myself. I still drive those rural roads, but I avoid that lane like the plague. I don't believe in aliens, ghosts, or any of that nonsense. But I know what I saw that night, and I'll never forget it. Whatever it wasn't human. And I pray to God I never see it again. Story 9. I don't even know where to start with this, but I'll do my best. My name's Mark, and I live in northern Michigan, not far from the Mackinac Bridge. It's quiet up here, the kind of place where life is simple and uneventful. At least it was. What I saw on that trip back from the Lower Peninsula still shakes me to my core. It was late October, the time of year when the trees are bare, and the cold feels like it's sinking straight into your bones. I had just finished a delivery job near Grand Rapids, a side hustle I picked up to make ends meet, and was heading back north in an old truck I'd borrowed from a buddy. It was one of those long hauls that felt endless, with hours of highway stretching out like a black ribbon in front of me. The first time I saw them was in a small town called Petoskey. I'd pulled over to grab some coffee at a 24-hour diner just off the main strip. The place was empty except for the waitress, who looked like she wanted to be anywhere else, and an old man nursing a cup of something steaming in the corner. As I waited for my order, I felt it, a presence. You know that feeling when someone's watching you, even when your back's turned? I glanced over my shoulder, and that's when I saw him. He was standing outside the diner, half hidden by the shadow of a flickering street lamp. He wore a black robe, heavy and long, with a hood that obscured most of his face. I couldn't see his eyes, but I swear I felt them. He wasn't moving, just standing there, staring. I turned back toward the waitress, trying to shake off the unease. "Hey," I said, forcing a smile. You get weirdos around here often? She barely looked up from her phone. Weirdos? You mean tourists? She smirked, then went back to scrolling. When I turned back to the window, he was gone. Just like that. I didn't even hear footsteps, and the street outside was dead silent. My coffee arrived, but my appetite was gone. I left the diner without touching it and got back on the road. The second one appeared about an hour later, somewhere along US 31. It was a lonely stretch of highway, the kind where your headlights barely cut through the darkness. No other cars in sight. I was trying to push the memory of that first guy out of my head, chalking it up to fatigue or paranoia. Then I saw her. At first, I thought it was an animal, a deer or maybe a coyote, standing by the side of the road. But as I got closer, I realized it was a person, a woman, wearing the same kind of robe. She stood on the shoulder facing my truck, perfectly still. Her hood was up, but I could make out pale skin underneath. Jesus, I muttered, gripping the wheel tighter. My first instinct was to keep driving, but something made me slow down, just enough to get a better look. As my high beams washed over her, she lifted her hand, not to wave, not to signal for help, but to point directly at me. My heart was pounding so hard I thought I might pass out. I floored it, speeding away as fast as that old truck could manage. When I glanced in the rearview mirror, she was still standing there, her arm outstretched, fading into the darkness. By the time I reached Mackinac City, I was shaking. I kept telling myself it was just a coincidence, that maybe it was some kind of elaborate prank. But deep down, I knew it wasn't. I stopped at a gas station to fill up before crossing the bridge, hoping the fluorescent lights and the hum of human activity would calm my nerves. The clerk was a kid, maybe 19, with a bored expression and earbuds in. "Busy night?" I asked, trying to make small talk as I handed him a crumpled 20. He shrugged, barely looking at me. "Not really." I wanted to tell him about what I'd seen, about the figures in the robes, but I couldn't bring myself to say it out loud. It sounded insane. Instead, I nodded and headed back to the truck. The third one was waiting for me in a rest area near Wilderness State Park. I'd pulled in to catch my breath, thinking the fresh air might clear my head. The parking lot was empty, the kind of desolation that made every sound seem louder. I stepped out of the truck and lit a cigarette, leaning against the door. That's when I saw him. He was standing in the park, just beyond the tree line. Same black robe, same unnatural stillness. Only this time, he wasn't alone. There were more of them, at least a dozen, scattered among the trees. They weren't moving, but I could feel their eyes on me, boring into my skull. My cigarette fell from my hand, and I stumbled back into the truck, slamming the door shut. "Go," I whispered to myself, fumbling with the keys. "Just go." As the engine roared to life, the figure closest to me stepped forward out of the shadows. His face was visible now, pale and expressionless, with hollow, empty eyes. He raised his hand and pointed, just like the woman on the highway. I didn't wait to see what would happen next. The tires screeched as I tore out of the parking lot, my hands gripping the wheel so hard they ached. I didn't stop until I was home, slamming the door behind me and locking every bolt. I haven't told anyone about that night until now. I don't know who or what they were, and I'm not sure I want to know. Story 10. I'll never forget that night in Oklahoma. I had been behind the wheel for hours, pushing myself farther than I should have. My mind was drifting, and the fatigue had settled in like a heavy fog. The road ahead was stretching on forever, lit only by the dim headlights of my rig. The truck felt like a steel coffin, the hum of the engine lulling me into a state of half-consciousness. I knew I needed to pull over soon, but I wasn't quite ready to admit it yet. The miles kept ticking by, and the weight of the road kept pulling me forward. It was late, maybe 2 a.m., the kind of night where the air feels thick and heavy, and the road becomes a blur beneath your tires. There was no sign of civilization for miles, just open stretches of highway and the occasional flicker of a distant light. I'd been through Oklahoma plenty of times, but something about this night felt off. I couldn't shake the feeling that I was being watched, like there was something out there, just beyond the edges of my vision. Then I saw it. At first, I thought it was a trick of the light, or maybe my eyes were playing games with me. But as I kept driving, the figure grew clearer. Standing in the middle of the road was what looked like a person, but there was something wrong about it. Its shape was wrong. Tall, unnaturally thin, its cloak fluttering in the wind, it looked like something straight out of a nightmare. I swear it had a hood, but there was no face. Just darkness where a face should be. I froze. My foot lifted off the accelerator, and for a second I thought about slamming on the brakes. But I didn't. I couldn't. My mind was racing, my heart thudding in my chest. I glanced at the mirrors. Nothing. No sign of it behind me. I squinted, staring through the windshield. It was still there, standing, unmoving, as if waiting for me. I shouldn't have looked away, but I did. I looked down at the dashboard, feeling the sweat start to prick at the back of my neck. The truck was still moving, but I could feel my hands trembling on the wheel. I glanced back at the road again, and in that moment, I knew. I knew that it was gone. My stomach twisted. The air and...
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Inside the cab felt stifling. I glanced in the mirrors again, then checked the road ahead. Nothing. Just the same endless stretch of blacktop. But I couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong, that something had just passed me by, unnoticed. Something I should have seen, something I couldn't explain. I kept driving. My eyes darted to the road, to the mirrors, back and forth. I was on edge, but I didn't want to admit that I was afraid. The last thing I wanted was to pull over and give in to the fear. I needed to make it to the next rest area, at least. But a few miles down the road, I found myself looking for a place to stop. The fatigue had become unbearable. I couldn't keep going. I'd lost my edge, and the creeping sense of dread hadn't left me. I needed to pull over, needed to rest. So I found a small pull-off, barely a parking spot, and parked the rig. I was still on high alert, but at least I was off the road. I sat there for a minute, gripping the wheel. My mind was racing, replaying the image of that thing in the road. Was it real? Had I imagined it? But the cold sweat on my skin told me it was real. It was as real as the truck I was sitting in. I turned off the engine and just sat in the silence. The truck's cabin felt like a tomb, the air too still, too heavy. I flicked on the CB, hoping to hear something, anything, to distract me from the lingering terror. I needed to know I wasn't alone. I wasn't ready to go to sleep yet. The crackle of static filled the air before a voice broke through. "Hey, anyone out there?" the voice said, gravelly and worn, like the man had been talking for hours. "I just came up on a mess a few miles back, near mile marker 42. Looks like a bad one. Accident, big rigs, cars, the whole thing. Took out the guardrail and everything. You guys don't want to be heading this way. You don't want to get caught up in it." I felt my blood run cold. Mile marker 42. That was just past where I had stopped. I'd been right there. I could have been right there. "How long ago did it happen?" I asked, trying to sound casual, but I could hear the tremor in my voice. "Maybe 15, 20 minutes ago," the voice replied, sounding distant. "Don't know if anyone survived. The way the rigs were twisted up, I couldn't see much. I didn't stick around. I'm telling you, you're better off stopping where you are. This stretch is cursed tonight." I felt the blood drain from my face. I couldn't breathe. The figure I'd seen, the one that shouldn't have been there, it had known. It had been waiting for me to stop. It had warned me. Somehow it had known I was coming. I sat frozen for a few minutes, unable to move, my heart pounding in my chest. I felt like I was suffocating, trapped in that small space, unable to escape. The thought of getting back on the road after hearing that voice, it felt impossible. I was no longer worried about how many hours I had left on my log. The only thing that mattered now was that I had stopped. And if I hadn't, I shuddered. Eventually, I gathered the courage to switch off the CB and step out of the truck. My legs were weak, but I had to make sure I wasn't just imagining things. The night felt different now. The air was colder, and the darkness seemed to stretch on forever. I didn't look back toward the road where I had seen that figure. I couldn't, but I swear I could feel it. That presence hanging just beyond the edge of my vision. The next morning, I learned that the wreck had claimed multiple lives. No one had seen it coming. They said the drivers didn't even have time to react. But I already knew that. I knew that if I hadn't stopped when I did, I would have been caught up in it too. And that thing in the road, whatever it was, it had saved me. Maybe it was death, or maybe it was something else. I'll never know. But I'll always remember the way it felt to see it, standing there in the middle of the road waiting. Thanks for watching. Don't leave before leaving a like to this video. Also, hit the subscribe button to support my work. And as always, have a horrific nightmare, my dear.